Well, hello and welcome back to the Mental Mastery Golf Podcast, the Let's Talk About It edition. This is another episode of this new format that we're doing with Jamie Glazier and myself, Ross Flanagan. We've got another special guest, Dan Maudsley. Dan, someone I've known in the golfing landscape for a long time, very good friend, and someone who's very passionate about developing his golf game using the power of the mental game. And it was a great opportunity for Dan to explore that with Jamie here tonight. Dan Maudsley, welcome to the Mental Mastery Golf Podcast, the Let's Talk About It series. You're a big supporter of it, and it's great to have you on.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Jamie, up there in Queensland, it looks magnificent up there. Always looks, you know, the light bathing in there. I can see you on the Zoom here. Sun-kissed. Life's good. Welcome back to the podcast. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks, Roscoe. Thank you. Yeah, it's beautiful up here at the moment. Summer starting to sort of just wind down, which means it's, you know, weather can be a bit more comfortable. But I think the support that we've had on these first couple of episodes have been, it's just been phenomenal. You know, the last podcast with Peter Bradbeer and how much that related to club level golfers dealing with those bigger moments, bigger events was fantastic. The amount of messages I received was really encouraging. And other than that, people are really loving the new format and just having some really great conversations. I know with Dan today, we'll have another great one. So looking forward to it.
Well, Jamie, I've known Dan, you know, through the golf world for a good number of years now. We've become friends. We recently had a game of golf, and he's someone that I've seen basically pick the game of golf up from basically zero, you know, where he got sort of wrangled in by one of his, you know, tattooing colleagues to come in and say, look, you're going to come and get in on board with this game of golf, and we're going to gear you up. And I've helped him along that journey with all of the great equipment, and I've seen him progress from, you know, basically not having a golf swing to really now being a competent, very competent golfer and very accomplished, who wants to get better. And you know, he's on that very quick upslope journey, and you know, there's a lot going on. So it's a good chance to talk to him and find out, you know, how, you know, the mental game can help him, you know, sustain and maintain and you know, enjoy the game and continue on that journey.
Yeah, that's great. And I know Dan has been a, you know, big fan of the podcast from the early days in episode one. So to be able to spend some time with you today, Dan, I'm really looking forward to it. So we might just start with a couple of just simple basic questions to get a little bit of understanding of your journey with the game of golf, and then we'll sort of target a key area or two that you would like to discuss today. But how long have you been playing the game for, mate?
Seriously, six years, 6.5 years.
Yeah.
Knocked around a little bit as a kid, but no, you know, just a little country course with a mate who, my mate was a member, his family, they're all members, and you know, run across on the, play the back nine couple of times for a month or so here and there, and then you put it aside for a little while and come back to it later on. So never really took it all that seriously, and then, yeah, got the bug, as Roscoe said, when I worked where I am now and I moved over there, and Mick, my now business partner, he's an absolute golf nut like me. And, yeah, he sort of not dragged me in, but, you know, we did it all started with a bit of a golf competition that the studio has every year, and, you know, sort of went in there and played and came last and got a wooden spoon and all that sort of stuff to go with it. But, yeah, just got the bug and just sort of kept going from there. So
that's great. That's great. I think we've all been there for sure when we first pick up the game and we just fall in love with it. And it, no matter whether it, you know, gives us chocolates one day and kicks our butt the next, that we still just love it. So that's fantastic. And through that six-year journey, what's your current sort of handicap, and what has been the lowest you've been off, if it's not your current one?
It's probably at about the lowest it's been. It is sitting around 10.4 or something thereabouts at the moment. So it's floating around. I mean, I think it's been down just under 10, but, you know, it's sort of half a point here or there either side of 10. So
yeah, great. Great.
Yeah.
But as Roscoe said, very competent golfer. Anyone that's hovering around single figures is obviously, you know, really playing the game at a nice level. And I know you put a decent amount of work into it as well. So that's really cool. So in sort of, you know, when we spoke to you about coming on the podcast and you put your hand up, What are the couple of key areas that you would like to unpack today and discuss to sort of move, you know, take forward with you in the game?
So it's probably something that a number of the guys and, you know, or everyone that's come on so far has sort of mentioned. So the same sort of things. But I actually, for me, I really, well, I sort of struggle to stay focused and put a lot of internal pressure on myself when I'm playing golf with low handicappers, and the issue I have with that is I have quite a number of friends that are really low handicappers. So I mean, Roscoe, as he mentioned, went out with him a couple of weeks back and played. It didn't play particularly well. It was really hot. It was very hard to concentrate anyway, and a tough track. PK's tough. So didn't really feel like I was putting too much pressure on myself, but inevitably I obviously was. You want to, it's not so much you want to prove yourself to your mates, but it's sort of a, I feel like I struggle to keep up a little bit. You know, I play quite a bit of golf with my golf coach as well. And, you know, it just makes it hard. So I want to try and, you know, take the focus away from that and just go back to enjoying golf, because I thoroughly enjoy it. And even when I do have a terrible round, you know, I've been working on golf amnesia quite a bit. So, you know, I am pretty good at still walking away at the end of the day and going, oh, well, it's just golf. You know, that was a bit of a stinker, but so be it, and go out and, you know, go out again and play quite well. But, you know, I have this small fear, I guess, you know, to sum it up, of playing with groups of people that are low handicappers or people that I don't often play with. You know, I play my best golf with people that I play regularly with, and also people that I know I'm in a similar skill level with. So Mick from work, you know, him and I go out and we, you know, we'll be shot for shot and the competition's great and, you know, we play our best shots. But then trying to play those again when you've got, some, I don't know, when you put yourself in front of a couple of other golfers and it just doesn't come off the same way.
Yep. Do you notice that you fall into the category of comparing yourself at any stage, or does that happen very often when you play?
Not with extremely low handicappers, because I know where I sit. Like, I've, you know, I'm not expecting to go out and not even necessarily compete. I just don't, I realize it's quite a, you know, an individual game to a degree, but yeah, I just think I just put a lot of internal pressure on myself to be like, okay, you know, it's not even a score I'm necessarily looking for. It's just like, I think I just worry too much in my head. I start playing shots really rushed, really quick. My tempo goes out. I can't focus. I just more just a hang on, hope and pray sometimes. I played with Scotty the other week, who was obviously in your first episode just recently.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started off beautifully, and then just a couple of bad holes, and then suddenly, you know, here we go. And that dire need to hang on to something just sort of,
In those sort of environments where you are playing with those, you know, good golfers, what would you say is your biggest fear when playing with those golfers?
It's probably, funnily enough, not embarrassing yourself or thinking that maybe they'll go, and no one ever does. I've never played golf with someone who's going to walk away going, oh, and I've never thought it myself as someone who's not particularly great at golf and gone, geez, they're shocking. But I think at the end of the day, people see you work so hard and put so much time into your training. Like, I take my training seriously. I take my golf seriously, but always with an element of enjoyment. And I think probably deep down, it's just, to be honest, this is that thing of like going out there and everyone goes, why the hell is this guy putting in all these hours? Geez, he's not really making a lot of progress.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just.
Yeah. It's interesting how those different environments, you know, that fear of embarrassment that you spoke about is, it is actually a very common one in the game of golf for a variety of different reasons. Even I know when I was working, you know, at Royal Melbourne in Melbourne when I was down there, and, you know, I'm working with some ridiculously successful people who, you know, are at the absolute height of their career and their industry, and they have a fear of embarrassment playing golf. Even though they might have just taken their game up, there's no, you know, there's no reason to have that embarrassment, but it's just a natural, normal response for us. And when you're in that environment playing against better players, that fear of embarrassment is going to be triggered a lot more than when you're playing in a group of people of your own level and your own standards. So, you know, it is fairly natural and normal. I suppose, you know, the important thing is to recognize what are some of the signs of that fear kicking in. Now, that might be days before the round, the morning of, you're driving there and you get a elevated heart rate when you start to think about the day. Like, would you recognize what some of your signs are for that little bit of a fear of embarrassment?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that elevated heart rate a little bit kicks in, not always, you know, not necessarily days before. Normally I'm actually pretty excited and pretty amped to play. Pretty much any time I get to play golf, I'm pretty amped about it, to be honest. Yep. But, yeah, definitely like pulling into the course and going, okay, how's this going to go, kind of starts to kick in a little bit. Yep. And I remind myself just to, you know, worry about, you know, not rushing. And it's stuff that you and I have been over before as well, in terms of like, you know, I get panicky and I don't stand over the ball and focus. I just almost just keen to get the shot out of the way so I don't have to live with the fear of failing anymore. And then my, it's more, it's for me, the main thing I notice is my tempo changes. Mainly in my swing, it's just rushed. I get over the ball. I don't really think about creating a shot, which I know I can do. Like, I know I'm more than capable of hitting great shots. But yeah, all that goes out the window, and I just, all that happens is it's just that, let's get it over with mentality. So,
And that's that, you know, anytime we do have a level of discomfort or we're experiencing discomfort, it is very easy to want to get out of that situation, that environment, rush it and get it over and done with. And I think one of the biggest things that, you know, we try to sort of talk about is discomfort isn't a precursor for bad golf or a bad shot. Okay, it's just part of playing golf. There's going to be moments and situations where we are uncomfortable. As long as we can recognize that and let that discomfort be there, have a level of understanding for it, but then to ultimately be able to control our attention and knowing what your triggers are, knowing how you respond as well to those triggers. So it may be that you start to think maybe negatively or start to worry about embarrassing yourself and you let those thoughts go on for a little while. It's about just recognizing what those patterns are and then coming back to a strategy that disconnects from those patterns and brings you back to, you know, the task at hand, brings you back to your purpose, your core values as a golfer, just enjoying your journey and not letting that external environment control too much of how you think about your game or yourself during that day. So so what would be some of the thoughts that you recognize float up when you're in those sort of environments?
I mean, in a lot of ways, it's the usual things. It's the, you know, I have this shocking habit of obviously, you know, shanking them, something shocking out of the blue. I'll play six or eight shots and then and they'll be great, and then I'll shank one, and then, you know, from there I'm like, oh no, now everyone knows I'm actually not good at golf, you know, like coming out and, you know, I might go par, par, birdie, par or something for example, and then shank a shot and have a terrible hole and go, well, now they know. And then from there that stays with me, and then it's that sort of like, you know, I try to let that disappear and have that sort of shot amnesia as such, but my amnesia with golf is a lot longer than that. It's more round to round rather than shot to shot or hole to hole. So that'll stay with me and I'll go, oh, it's all right. And then we'll, you know, in my head I'm trying to tell myself that the next shot will be good, don't worry about it. And then you might hit another bad one. You go, okay, maybe it won't. And then it gets harder and harder to climb over that hurdle each time. And those, it's that typical, you know, don't hit a bad shot, don't hit a bad shot. Don't, even though I know full well they shouldn't be things I'm thinking about, I should be going back to visualizing my shot and resetting and going, okay, well, that was just the one bad one. Let's just move on. You know, like in the equation, I hit probably more good shots than bad shots, but in your head, that bad shot is so much worse than the good ones.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting when you talked about the shank and, you know, you could be playing really nicely and then you hit a shank and then you come up with that, now they know.
Yeah.
Now they know I'm not very good. But really, does one shank have to mean that?
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we've seen the best players in the world shank it, you know, all the time. So it's just one of those patterns in golf. But one of the skills that we want to be able to develop is in recognizing some of those triggers that pop up in those environments when you're playing with better players is the skill of challenging your thoughts. You know, when you recognize one of these, we might call them masterful thoughts, these big grand comments or sayings or statements about now they know, just to challenge that thought, sit there and go, well, now they know what? Now they know that you're human. Everyone shanks it. It doesn't mean anything. I've been playing some really great golf and I'm going to continue to play some really nice golf. So just trying to always challenge some of those negative theories or negative statements that we can often create, you know, in a round of golf. But again, sitting back and actually recognizing, you know, what are the triggers? What are the signs? What are your signs of that fear? And then having a really good self-awareness of what are some of the patterns, the thought patterns, the cognitive patterns, but then to be able to challenge those thoughts so we diffuse their meaning, okay, and then be able to come back to the task at hand and just focus on competency again, which is probably what you were connected to and focused on prior to the shank or whatever that situation may have been.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
Jamie, I was just going to say, you know, we recently saw Tiger Woods have a shank at Riviera on the 18th hole there, and you know, the whole world went, oh wow, you know, Tiger has a shank. You know, like, it's not the first time he's had one, but you know, it was on the TV for the whole world to see. But immediately, you know, he just diverted to like, but did you see the recovery? You know, like, how good was that? You know, what's he thinking about there? You know, like, put yourself in the mind's eye of Tiger. You know, like, how does he recover from that? That he just then goes and does what he does to recover.
Yeah. Well, I think the beauty of it, and this is where really elite players and club level golfers, this is where the mental game is vastly different. And it comes back to, for me, a lot of it comes back to belief. Okay. If you've got a strong belief about something and then you have an outlier pop in, you don't perform in a way that you normally do, it's easier to get rid of and dismiss because you've got that really strong belief in it. But if your belief is a bit fragile or you believe you're not very good, then when you don't perform well or something happens, that sort of lack of belief can really take effect. And I know Herbie, when I was working with him a few years ago, he sort of spoke a lot about one of the best putters in the world. If he was to miss a couple of 5-foot putts, he dismisses that because he knows he's one of the best putters in the world. But if he was to hit a couple of poor wedge shots because his belief and confidence in his wedge game wasn't as strong, that would create a seed of doubt for future shots. So it really all comes back to a really solid belief system and a confidence in your competence. And that's where a club-level golfer, we don't have that level of belief that an elite player will, but it doesn't mean we can't lean into some form of belief, even if it's a belief in being competent at a 4 out of 10. You can now connect with what that 4 looks like. Okay, so that's where, you know, when that shank happens or when that little bit of fear of embarrassment gets triggered, you've got something to come back to. So the belief system for me is a lot of post-shot, post-round stuff, acknowledging either what you did well or what you would like to improve next time, end of the day debriefing, you know, what you learned about your performance. And again, same thing, you know, what you did well and what you would like to improve on next time. And then what happens is the brain starts to create this really nice growth mindset which is diffuses the fear and anxiousness, what I call around the pattern of forever, the fear of, am I going to be like this forever? You know, when we activate that growth mindset, it's now a learning opportunity. And Roscoe went through that process with his chipping and short game a couple of years ago through the podcast. You know, when we're like, hey, allow yourself the freedom to fail, but use this as a learning opportunity, connect with something to focus on, perform, step out of it, and extract the information that's going to help you get better. All of a sudden, the fear of embarrassment again is diffused because you've accepted that you might fail, and that's okay because we're on this journey of learning. And I think that's, you know, that's the beauty of being able to help club level golfers access that journey of improving and developing and having a more of an informational response as opposed to an emotional response.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So I think, you know, if we sort of unpack that a little bit, you know, first thing is to recognize, you know, those triggers, the environment for that fear of failure, which is playing with better players. You're going to know potentially a day or two prior to that. Okay, so then you can maybe go through a little bit of visualization process of visualizing yourself in that environment, visualizing that sense of, you know, that physiological or mental response to fear. Oh, geez, I hope I don't play bad. And then go to your strategies. Go to your strategies of recognizing, you know, what that physiological response is to fear. When it pops up, then you're going to be able to, you know, control your focus on the task at hand. But if you can allow yourself that layer of allowing yourself that acceptance to fail the night or two prior, that's going to greatly diffuse the fear, you know, as well. So challenging those thoughts is, you know, is that other process. And then just from a debriefing point of view, whether it be debriefing shots or rounds of golf, be a little bit more informational versus emotional.
Yeah, that makes total sense. That's fantastic.
Yeah, so... I mean, I think we've all been in that emotional response phase versus informational.
Yes.
You know, and the challenging of thoughts is a really interesting one. Sometimes we had a session this morning with a player in the US and she spoke about, you know, when she was sometimes every now and then when she's 120 out, she'll have this thought of not wanting to make a bogey. And she's... an incredible collegiate player, and I'm like, but if you challenge that thought, if you ask yourself, what's the percentage of time I'm going to make a bogey from here, and challenge it and say, no, hang on a minute, I'm a really great short iron player, and I'm not going to make bogey from here very often if I commit to the shot. Once you start to challenge those thoughts, you just redirect your attention, which ultimately enables you to be able to commit to the shot. So,
definitely a far more positive way to look at it.
Yeah. And look, it's not, as long as it's not delusional, you know, it's okay, which
realistic.
You know, when we have these stories about what's going to happen in around the golf, we take it as truth, as like as fact, but it's not. It's just this distortion that we can, a layer of distortion we can sometimes add because of that emotional response. But challenging those thoughts help us to sort of detach from the emotion and look at what is fact. And that doesn't mean you're going to stand there and say, I'm going to put this in the hole from 120. It's like, no. If I can commit to this shot, I know that, you know, out of 10 different situations, I'm going to probably hit 6 really nice shots and I'll manage the other 4. You know, so it's just about being as realistic as you can, but challenging a lot of those negative thoughts that are driven from that fear, I think is a really great way to diffuse it and allow you to sort of step into commitment.
Yeah, that's great.
So what's your sort of competitive golf look like moving forward, mate? You've got club comps or?
I haven't been playing a lot of comp golf, mainly because I wanted to get on top of this, and I feel like I didn't want to put so much pressure on myself that I actually didn't want to play golf.
Yeah,
because I do love playing it so much. So at the moment, just working with my coach a little bit, I do want to start playing a little bit of comp golf in the coming weeks. So That's what it kind of looks like for now, is just, you know, just, yeah, sort of getting back into it, maybe playing, you know, comp round once a week, once a fortnight, sort of coming up maybe in the next month or so. And then just, you know, just working on it. But it definitely gives me plenty to think about and sort of reframing those thought processes to focus on, you know, because those negative thoughts, once it comes in, are so much more extreme than they need to be. So over the top that, you know, I think really focusing on the, hang on, my percentage of actually being able to make something work here is actually far higher than that chance of that negative outcome. Because I do know I can hit good shots.
So, that's great. And a really good strategy for, you know, for coming back into it and playing some comps again, I would sort of almost say give yourself three guinea pig rounds of golf. Like, go play comps, but like, I'm not going to expect anything of myself for three rounds. I'm just going to go out there, try and implement those skills and those strategies, have that really great learning growth mindset and just learn from it and see what you can extract from it over three rounds of golf. Just helps to sort of diffuse some of that expectation that can take that attention away from the skills and that competency. But, mate, we'll look forward to, hearing about how you get back into it over the next few months. And, you know, I think what we're going to do moving forward at the start of some episodes is when we get some feedback from some of the other guests, we might just update everyone on some of their progress and then get into the new episodes. So, keep me and Roscoe in the loop with how that goes. And, mate, really appreciate you jumping on. And, thanks for your time.
Thank you. I absolutely will. Keep you guys posted and we can grow from here.
Love it, mate.
Well, Dan Morsley, thanks for joining us. Jamie Glazier, thanks again for your insights into the world of the mental game of golf. I'm sure that will help Dan no end. I absolutely believe that he can take his golf to the next level. I've seen him. He's someone that I've seen grow from so lower base level to such a very, very accomplished base level. Everything you talked about there is going to help him no end. It's great to see it in practice, and I look forward to maybe seeing you out there in the course again, Dan. I'm not sure if we'll get to before I get to Scotland, but anyway, we look forward to staying in touch. Everybody, thanks for joining us on the Mental Mastery Golf Podcast Let's Talk About It series. We'll see you on the next episode, where we've got another guest with another series of challenges around the mental game that we're happy to unpack. If you want to do that, well, send us a message and maybe we can unpack yours as well. Thanks for joining us.